Welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It's Travis. We've got a lot of questions to tackle today, guys. So we're going to jump right in. I don't know if you've noticed this news story, but the IDR recertification deadline has been extended to quote unquote no sooner than February 2026. At the time I recorded this, it came out like a couple hours before I recorded this. And there's a lot of questions that you people have right now. I want to say just some quick thoughts at the very top of today's episode. I still think that everybody needs to be super careful with how they're filing taxes right now. So if you're in the safe forbearance, if they make a court ruling that says it's illegal, everybody's got to get into IBR. So suddenly everybody needs to have their tax returns filed a certain way. Or if that court ruling happens in like May, then everybody ideally would have an extension that they could use to pay on a lower taxable income if your income went way, way up, right? So there's, even though that they're saying they're extending the deadlines, there's still a whole lot of things that could happen, even with the pay plan for folks that were like, if they say pay is illegal, then suddenly you might have to switch to IBR. So paying attention to your IDR payment amount and your recertification date potentially being accelerated is still a good idea, even though we've got this new announcement that this current Department of Ed is extending the IDR recert dates, which will be welcome news to a lot of people. So let's tackle some of the questions that are coming in our inbox. There's a lot of them. I'm not going to be able to actually get to all of them today because there's so many of them. This is the most I've ever seen, to be honest. And so listen to the first one. Let's take a listen.
First off, thank you for all of your guidance. You have been very helpful. The question I have is, given that I graduated from a doctorate program in 2020, have been on the pay-as-you-earn with zero payments due to COVID-19 pandemic, and currently have consolidated loans still on the pay-as-you-earn, but in forbearance while dealing with the lawsuits on SAVE and IDR plans, should I start paying towards the interest now to prevent it from accumulating? Or is it better to let the loan continue gaining interest during this period of zero payments and court lawsuits?
So this person, there's about, according to our survey results, about 1/5 of our community has not recertified since the pandemic. This person's on pay as you earn. If they have a $0 payment, theoretically, if we're to trust the White House, now that $0 payment is going to be extended until no sooner than February 2026. So that means that this $0 payment is just going to keep going on. And yes, the balance will be growing, but you're getting credit towards forgiveness. I would keep that $0 payment going. And my, you know, answers to these questions are going to be a little bit more brief than I usually do because I'm going to try to get through as many of them as I can. So let's listen to our next one.
Hi, my question is, I have 5 payments left for forgiveness and I applied online to get back into the IBR. I'm on the SAVE plan, and I wanted to get back into IBR so that I can finish those 5 payments and be forgiven. But since that's been blocked, like the online applications, I know my servicer has received the application via an email they sent me, but is it worth resubmitting it to them via paper or just to wait? Because I see that my forgiveness date has been pushed back. It was June. Now it says July. Now it says August as I'm waiting. So I don't know if I just have to keep waiting or if I should submit a paper application just to make sure it goes through. Because I've heard some people have submitted paper applications and it went through faster than waiting for their online application, which was taking months. Thank you so much.
So if we were to trust the Department of Ed, theoretically, if someone's already submitted an application, they're supposed to put you into a processing forbearance while they process the switchover, which theoretically counts for PSLF. So I would probably not worry about submitting another application, but if you wanted to, you could, and it's not going to hurt you. And you could do that with your servicer portal. There are, there's actually like a paper application with a 2027 expiration date that you can find if you search IDR paper application and you click on a Reddit link with this Wayback Machine tool that stores like historical versions of PDFs for websites when they're 404'd. You know, if you wanted to do the very high anxiety path, you could fill that out too. If you wanted to do the low anxiety path, which I think is totally fine, you could just trust that you've submitted the application and wait and hope that that processing forbearance gets counted to PSLF and saves you from having to make some of those payments. So let's keep going.
Hello, Travis. Thanks for taking my question. I've really enjoyed the YouTube videos you've been posting recently, getting a lot of information from that. My question does not have anything to do really with PSLF. my concern is I need to find out how I can get the lowest payment possible. I don't really plan on achieving forgiveness. I don't even really care how much the total amount is I've paid once this is over. I just need to find a way to get the lowest payment possible so my family and I can survive month to month. I make about $60,000 a year. Any advice? What's your thoughts on how to get that payment as low as possible? Thank you.
Okay, this person said $60,000 a year. They said family, so I'm going to assume that means they have at least one spouse and probably at least one child. So let's say it's family size of three. The save plan math was a little bit easier to do in my head because the numbers were easier to remember on the federal poverty line percentages, actually. But let's just say, okay, we've got family size of three. My guess off the top of my head is family size of three, poverty line is going to be about $40,000, 150% of the poverty line. I mean, this is just me guessing off the top of my head. I have to look it up to be sure. But if you have $60,000 of income and you have $40,000 of poverty line deduction, discretionary deduction income, you know, that means your net is $20,000 that you'd pay 15% on if you're on the IBR plan. So that's 15% of 20 grand is $3,000, which is $250 a month. Now, if that is not affordable because you are maxed out in every which way, then what I would say is there a way to maybe consider forbearance? You get up to 3 years of that. That's one reasonable path. If you wanted to be extremely aggressive about it, theoretically, if you take out more loans and you consolidate, that resets your forbearance count so that you could get an additional 3 years of forbearance that way. And then if you have very modest debts where you just need the absolute lowest payment, you could do a graduated extended plan if that payment amount was lower than $250. And then maybe it's not. Then I would say you would want to track your spending on an app. Like a Monarch Money is the one that I like the most that we use on the financial planning side. And you want to identify, you know, unused subscriptions. You want to identify your biggest expenses. Usually, if you cut back on one of your three top categories, you can change your financial situation from extremely stressed to extremely viable. If you're willing to make a cut in one of your top three categories, you don't have to worry about cutting Starbucks. It's not going to make much of a difference. So let's keep going down the list.
Hey, thanks for taking questions. My name is Matt. I have approximately $203,000 in graduate education loans. I am in the PSLF under the PAYE, income-driven repayment plan. Unfortunately, somehow I got wrapped up into the save forbearance and I've called multiple times. I've requested to be taken out of forbearance as I did not apply for save. And they have reassured me that they see that I was resubmitting my annual recalculation for PAYE and that it should be taken care of. I should be in processing. So this all started back in June. And I got placed into forbearance in October. So I am currently, as of November, at 105 payments towards my PSLF. Now I'm stuck in this forbearance and I can't seem to get any help to get taken out of forbearance. So my question is, should I try to switch to standard payments or, you know, IBR as a way to try to get those extra payments in now, or just wait until I hit the 120 and then hope buyback is still around? You know, I'm trying to ask every time I call if there's any other options, and they're telling me that I'm still in PAYE, my application is being processed, and they've place me on a high priority, and you know, I keep calling back every 10 days because that's how long I've been told that it should take for this priority to process. But unfortunately, it's been going on for several months, and I feel like it's just kind of getting pushed around with no clear end in sight. So I'm just trying to figure out what I should do, just kind of ride it out, hope for the best, or be more active and maybe jump into the standard plans. It would be tight, but I could at least do it for a year and knock out that PSLF. I'm just curious to see what your thoughts are. Thanks.
I would not get super aggressive right now just because I don't think it's going to help any. And so it's just going to raise your anxiety levels for no reason. If you should be on PAYE, what's probably going to happen is they will probably say at some point that PAYE is not legal to get 20-year forgiveness on. That's, if I had to make a guess, it's more of like a 60-40 guess. I'm very uncertain about that guess. But if they did do that ruling from the courts, PAYE would probably stick around and you could still get PSLF on it, but you might not be able to get the 20-year version of forgiveness on it. But again, that is highly speculative. I don't want to make anybody worried about that because there is no point in being worried until we have more data because we can't do anything about it. So for PAYE, if you were trying to get extra credit towards PSLF on PAYE, there's nothing that you can do to speed up the process right now. You want to wait. You want to hope that they count it as a processing forbearance if they did try to switch you to the save forbearance for some reason. And then if PSLF buyback is still around in 15 more months, then you could try to apply for PSLF buyback. If it's not, then you want to see if you have a partial financial hardship so you could get access to IBR. And then you still only have 15 months left to go. So just compare that to paying off the entire $200,000 loan. That's still going to be exceptionally good and something that should be a happy thing and not something that gives you debilitating anxiety, although I understand why the person might feel that way. And now we're going to listen to the next one.
Hi, I have AidVantage and they have a month counter on my profile. So it says I have 3 years and 2 months left for the IBR forgiveness. I'm currently on save. And also to note, I am a post-class member in the Sweet versus Cardona case. So with our deadline on that case on decision, it's coming up in less than 11 months. Which at that point, if they haven't made a decision, is supposed to be automatic discharge is the language that I see. So I don't know if discharge and forgiveness are the same thing or what that means. But anyways, should I still consider the IBR forgiveness plan if I have the court case that's about to switch over to full discharge in about 11 months? What are your thoughts on this?
My thoughts are actually that you're in a great position. And I know that sounds kind of weird to say that, but I think that if you have a Sweet v. Cardona that's supposed to happen in 11 months, you wait it out, see what happens. If that fails, you got your backup plan of getting IBR forgiveness. And there's no use in worrying about trying to get simultaneous credit because either one of those two options is much better than paying off the entire loan. So I think that you would just need to literally close your eyes, pretend your student loans don't exist, pretend stuff in the mail is not happening almost, and then just wait and see what happens with that Sweet v. Cardona settlement. I will say this, I cannot go into a lot of details, but I have seen some very wild things with Sweet v. Cardona settlements in the past few months, and I would not be surprised if something comes out of nowhere to try to shut that down. And I'm not going to go into detail as to why I think that, but I do think that it's still worth trying because it's possible that you will get it. So you want to try it, but not count on it, and make sure you have a backup plan in place for going for IBR forgiveness if it were to fail with Sweet v. Cardona. Now let's listen to the next one.
Hello. I am in a complicated and frustrating situation. I reached my 120th month of PSLF qualifying employment in February 2025. Back in October of 2024, I applied to switch from save to IBR through the FSA website using a pay stub because I started a new job with a lower salary back in January of 2024. In January of this year, I submitted that original application and my 2024 W-2 directly to Mohila, and they put me on a processing forbearance on February 15th. I'm currently at 112 qualified payments and 8 ineligible forbearance months, but my employment for those months has been certified, and I submitted a request for buyback. But as we know, that is a dark and mysterious void. Honestly, I would gladly pay the 10-year standard payment for those 8 months to get me off of this roller coaster. For now, I am still on this IBR processing forbearance and I, as like a backup plan, and I really need my IBR calculation to be based on the documentation they currently have because my husband and I filed separately last year and took a tax hit, but we can't file separately this year, and I won't have a partial financial hardship once we file this year jointly. This is a situation where filing a tax extension would be helpful. But filing an extension let me use my 2023 filing status for a bit longer this year. I'm so close. Thanks.
Yes, I mean, an extension in this case is actually wonderful and exactly why we started the tax firm that we did. Because ultimately, you know, yes, you can get a competent taxpayer for a few hundred bucks that will just do your taxes. You're not going to get a lot of planning for that at all. And if you do, then you found a unicorn and they're probably going to retire soon. They're probably 65 and they probably have their own way of doing things. I mean, just in tax world, my experience is that the supply of competent tax preparers and tax planners, really more so than preparers, is extremely limited. And so the good news is like you can, you know, if you can get the people that you need in place from a tax team perspective, then you can do student loan aware tax stuff that could save you just a boatload of money. So this example is a perfect example. If you file jointly right away, like a normal tax firm might do without being aware of the student loan implications, this person might not even be able to get PSLF at all. And that would be devastating. That's a six-figure cost. So instead, you file the extension. But not only would you file the extension, I would actually, this person says they have to file jointly. I would actually bet that the reason this person said that is because the filing separate cost, because the income differential between the two spouses probably puts them at having a tax hit of at least 10 grand or more. But what this person should know is if you file separately for taxes, you can always amend it later and you can get that money back once the tax return is no longer being used for that particular year for your IDR payment. So for this person, if you needed a partial financial hardship as insurance, I would file separate, take the painful hit on your taxes, get PSLF. When you have no more PSLF loans at all because they're all forgiven, go back and amend not only your 2024 returns, but also your 2023. And you can get all of that money back as a refund. So that's probably a five-figure amount of value added just from student loan aware tax planning. And before you think that this is a pitch, we are at capacity. We don't have any more client spots. I hope we will have some more client spots if we are able to expand our tax team maybe in the summer. That's what we're shooting for right now because, again, I mentioned that labor problem in the tax market. It is very, very real. So hopefully that helped some people, though. Hopefully some people could sort of struggle through TurboTax with that answer to understand why I said it that way. So this is a perfect example of somebody that could get PSLF when they might not have gotten PSLF simply from good tax planning. So let's take a few more questions.
Hello, my name is PJ from Illinois. I'm under the IDR plan, income-driven repayment. I was wondering if, is it beneficial for me to file my taxes married and separately, then married jointly, because my income will be shown as lesser? Thank you.
So in general, I really like people filing married, filing separate extensions right now. The reason is if you file a separate extension, it gives you a little bit of wiggle room if they have an adverse court ruling with the save plan and everybody's got to be accelerated to their repayment. It just gives you a lot of flexibility to file a married, filing separate extension if you can stomach the upfront tax hit. Not everybody needs to worry about that now with that extension of the IDR recertification deadline. If you're on IBR, theoretically, you're not going to be asked to recertify until February 2026. So technically, since the deadline for extensions for the final filings is October 2025, that means that you might as well just go ahead and file the final return, you know, and not necessarily worrying about an extension now if you're on IBR. So the thing that's really freaking challenging is literally during tax season, the logic of whether or not somebody should file separately or jointly is constantly changing because of what the current administration is doing with student loan rules and the court cases. And it's obviously maddening to try to run a firm like that. But we're doing our best for clients. And I think that all of our logic actually that we set for the beginning of tax season is still true. Because I think that what's going to happen is with all of this mass kicking out of IDR recertification dates, people who filed with their final returns are really not going to be hurt that much. People that filed married filing separate extensions can also have those situations adjusted. So basically, we got another tax season effectively where there's mercy provided on borrowers, frankly. And so that's a good thing. In general, if my person on the street stops me and says, how should I file my taxes? I would tell them married filing separate with an extension. But if you filed any other way, it's probably not a disaster for, except for a few rare circumstances, such as, you know, future things that we can't predict, such as if a court randomly rules in May that everybody's got to get off the save plan and get onto IBR immediately and people file jointly and they don't have a partial financial hardship. Even that is correctable though, because you could just simply wait a year. You could just wait a year and get the correct tax return and do forbearance for a year, and then you could get back onto like IBR or something to get that partial financial hardship if you messed up. Don't be afraid. There's always loopholes. We can always fix most any problem with student loans, but you know, I understand people still feeling worried. So let's take another one.
Hello, I'm going for PSLF. I have about 2.5 years left on my student loans to have that 10-year forgiveness. I work for a nonprofit. I am currently on the SAVE plan. I was actually laid off last April, and during that time when the SAVE plan was stopped, I think I listened to an episode and learned about the IBR plan, so I applied to the IBR plan in October while I was only receiving unemployment. Since then, I do have another job in the nonprofit field, and I have been waiting for the application to go through for IBR for quite some time now. I applied October 26th, and it says it's been with Mohila since October 28th, and I haven't heard anything. I was just wondering what the expected timeline is to hear back from them or when I can expect to be changed to the IBR plan. And also, I was wondering if this time in this forbearance would count towards my student loan forgiveness. Thank you for all that you do.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're applying for IDR, the reality is if they put you in a processing forbearance, then those months count. But the problem is you have no control over that. You can't ask for a processing forbearance from a servicer after applying for a change in your repayment plan. You just have to hope that they apply it that way. Ideally, they'll apply it. In terms of how long will it be until they process all these freaking IDR applications, there's a couple things that might happen. The Department of Ed might get off their butts and reopen the online application. There's obviously a lot of pressure on them to do that. But then there's also legal pressure now on them. The American Federation of Teachers just filed a lawsuit, and they are asking for immediate access to IDR repayment, specifically IBR, because their members want to get access to PSLF, and they're blocking, you know, IBR, which is against the law, frankly. It's not in the statute. The statutes guarantee IBR, and yet they're blocking it and blaming, you know, the court injunction when that's not true. They're just trying to redo the IDR application in the way that they want it to be done. And that's why they put everything on pause, so that they could stop everything and fix it the way they want it. So, yeah, I would just say in terms of how much longer, I can't tell you for sure. But, you know, in a perfect world, some of these months will count while they're processing the application. So now I want to switch away from some of those questions. We still have so many to get to, and I'll try to get to those. We might even need to do a bonus episode to try to get to all the questions, but I will do my very best. And so it's studentloanplanner.com/voicemail is the place to go and leave a question. It should be really easy. And any kind of reasonable question, I'll try to do my best to answer it. And the only ones I'll leave out are the ones that, you know, the audio gets cut off or it's, you know, you can't hear it or something like that. So I really am trying to do my best for our loyal podcast listeners like you to answer questions live to the extent that I possibly humanly can right now, because I know anxiety levels are so high at the moment. So a couple thoughts real quick on the IDR recertification dates, and then I have to wrap. The IDR recertification date's getting pushed to no sooner than February 2026. That's the same language the Biden administration used when they were extending the IDR recertification. What's clear to me is these decisions that the White House is making, people are so afraid to cause mass economic harm right now. It seems like to me both presidents are worried about that. That's my interpretation of this, is because they do not have to push the IDR recertification dates. I think they're just doing it because it's the easy button. And when Trump paused all student loans, right, he didn't pause only people that had trouble making payments or something like that. He paused everybody because that was the easy button during the COVID pause. And this makes sense. Like, I know that people are super worried about what the Trump administration is doing, a lot of things. But it also kind of makes sense to me that, like, sometimes out of left field, something like this happens where you're like, wait, who, what Department of Ed said to do this? Because I actually have some sources that suggest that this is definitely true, that this Department of Ed under the current new leadership appointed by President Trump were the ones that made this decision. This was not a like I assumed it was, a Biden administration directive to continue these Biden era policies. This is a new Trump era policy of, hey, just extend everybody to no sooner than February 2026. The problem is this is a little bit of a false sense of security, because if the lawsuit comes back with the SAVE plan and they say everybody has to get off SAVE and you have to sign up for something else, well, IBR is the only option that's guaranteed in statute, and that would trigger a mass recertification of income. So anybody on the SAVE forbearance, and that's about 3 in 5 of people in our audience, would have to reapply with their most recent taxable income. That's why extensions are so good right now, because when you don't know what the heck's going on, giving yourself options by filing extensions, not a bad idea. Now, for people that are on the pay plan, same kind of thing. Pay is hopefully safe, but in the worst case scenario where it's not, you could get forced off of that onto IBR. And then in that case, do you have flexibility with how you filed your taxes, right? So that you'll have a partial financial hardship to get access to IBR, because for PSLF borrowers, that's critical to have a qualifying plan. For non-PSLF borrowers, it depends on the math. If you have a more than 2-to-1 debt-to-income ratio, you're probably still pretty good off going for forgiveness on that 25-year IBR plan, although it's not as good. And then if you have a below 1-to-1 debt-to-income ratio, you know, eventually you might consider, well, I just might just refinance and pay this off. And then in between that 2-to-1 debt-to-income ratio and 1-to-1, it's more up in the air. And then finally, the folks that are on the IBR plan directly, those are probably the luckiest people, honestly. Because people that are on the IBR plan, I don't really see any legal potential situation that would force IBR borrowers to recertify their income sooner than February 2026. So if you're on IBR, I probably would feel comfortable filing a final return, depending on if you should be separate or joint, for your taxes, because you probably will get that, you know, IDR recert date extended. If it's before February 2026, it's probably getting extended a full year, which is just crazy to think about how many people have not recertified their income since before COVID. I mean, it's pretty crazy, right? Income-driven repayment, it's not really been based on income because of all the COVID disruption and all the sort of back and forth with chaos of student loans and different administrations from different political parties. Sometimes weird things happen like this that are save you money. And when that happens, you know, it's like Monopoly, the game, the board game, bank error in your favor. Don't question it. Just be like, all right, awesome. Let me go take some of this money I was going to have to hold for my student loans and try to use it to reaching some of my other financial goals, right? Obviously, if we can help in any way with that in terms of the services we provide, y'all know how to find us, studentloanplanner.com, slpwealth.com for the financial planning firm. And yeah, just reach out if you need anything. We'll be happy to help. Thank you for listening to the pod. And then studentloanplanner.com/voicemail if you want to ask us more questions based off of this new IDR recertification extension guidance that we literally just got. Thank you, everybody. Have a great rest of your week. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good, they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.